Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Hello, everyone. Hello. Thanks very much. You're very welcome. Hello, Tramline Dublin. How are you? Oh, good, good. Lots of wet socks in the audience, hunched over. There's a smell of damp in the air. Thank you so much for coming. We really appreciate it. So we've got a lovely show. The listeners on News Talk, you're also very welcome. What you may or may not know, listeners, is that in the room we have 100 of our green ticket winners, and they are going to go head-to-head later on for the ultimate prize, a trip to Japan to experience Ireland-Scotland in Yokohama City on Sunday, September 22nd. We also in the room have their plus one, and we don't know if they're going to bring that person to Japan, if they're going to stiff them live on air. That's going to be fun. I think we're all looking forward to that moment. Thanks so much for your support. I'm going to Japan with this guy instead. This is all, as ever, with thanks to Heineken, worldwide partner to Rugby World Cup 2019 Japan. So that is all ahead of us. In the meantime, there is feverish anticipation over really what could well be the best Heineken Champions Cup final we're likely to see, or certainly it has all the hallmarks and all the billing. And we hope it lives up to its name. So, to discuss and explain over the next 45 minutes or so, we have a stellar panel. Between them, they have an obnoxious number of Ireland caps. They have various Lions tours. They have a Grand Slam. They have coaching experience in Wales and France. And, perfectly for this panel as well, they have plenty of Heineken Champions Cup medals in their back pocket. So, we're delighted they're here. Would you give it, please, a big round of applause for Brian O'Driscoll, Keith Wood, and Bernard Jackman, everyone! Hello, all. You're very welcome.
Thank you, Joseph. How are you?
How you doing? Great. Brian O'Driscoll, hello to you.
Joe, hi.
Bernard Jackman, hello to you.
Hi.
This final has an era-defining feel about it. The two best teams of the past 10 years, really. Winners of the last three, winners of six of the last 10. And crucially, a lot of their best players, their winning players, still involved. They're not living off past glories. Everything about this final just screams, can't miss it.
I think we've had probably the best week of competitive sport in another one, and it's teed up perfectly for this because nobody cares about that, you know, but it gets teed up for this at the weekend. When you look back at the two semi-finals, I obviously wanted Munster to get there. The two best teams won, but it was the manner in which they won. They won kind of going away from it. You know, they started playing very well. They had a great confidence. They had a great control. They had great capacity to do the right thing at the right time. And they just looked as if, yeah, this was a sense of destiny. Mm. But it was like a sense of destiny for both of them. So it's very hard to kind of pull out to say who was the favourite for the weekend. I just thought they're two teams on fire. And it's a pleasure when you have a competition like this that doesn't have them meet in the quarterfinal or the semi-final, that they meet in the final and we get to see the Heineken Cup in all its full glory.
I was trying to think, Bernard, is there any other final that compares with it? You know, maybe Munster to lose in 08 if you're talking about teams who've both won the competition in good form, pedigree, everything else. That was the only one I could think of. I don't know if there's another one in the past 23 years which jumps out at you to compare.
No, I don't think so. I think Leinster knocked Saracens out last year at the quarterfinal stage. The final was incredibly tough against Racing, but I don't think Racing have the culture or the tactical acumen that Saracens have.
And they've never won it.
They've never won it. Saracens know what it takes. Like, you're going to be sure this weekend on Saturday, neither team are going to underperform because of nerves or the occasion getting to them. All these players have been there, done that, and they're fit and ready to play for their life. And I think whatever team wins it, you know, I think they rightly could say that they're the best team that's won a Heineken Cup because as I said, Leinster are going back to back. Saracens, you know, have done great things in the Premiership, have won Europe, and you know, they can win their third title.
Third in 4 years as well. Yeah. Would you go along with that? Is the winner on Saturday the best Heineken Cup team we've seen?
Over the course of the last 20 years? For now. It's transient, you know. And
well, obviously I meant for now.
No, but like... but yeah, but... yeah, I know, but I... like...
you prefer the 09 team. Is that what you're trying to say?
No, I think this Leinster team is a better team than the three teams that I was part of it with Leinster, definitely, the strength and depth. But I look at that Saracens team now, and you can see the appetite and the hunger that they have. I was on BT Sport last night, and they had an interview with Owen Farrell, and talking about how much respect he has for Leinster and how, you know, what high esteem he holds them in because of what they've achieved, because they've managed, they're playing for their fifth title. And he said, all we can do is aspire to be them. And so, you know, from that side of things, are Leinster now, having won four titles, the best team to play in Europe? Probably. And only Saracens can only get to three. So you are judged on the titles you've won. We were holding Toulouse, heralding them as the team for years and years, even when they were in their quieter times, because of what they'd achieved for. So it's all to do with the amount of titles that you have. Because no one remembers how many finals you've been in. They only remember the ones that you've won. And fortunately for Leinster, they've been in four and they've won four. Mm. So, my only concern about the game is that you look at all the stats and, you know, they're the two best defences in the league. They don't give away too many penalties. They're miserly. They've conceded so few tries. I'm just concerned that it might be a 15-12. And it mightn't be the spectacle that we would hope, and to certainly knock on from the Champions Cup the Champions League semi-finals that we've had.
Yeah.
You hope that we're going to get a great spectacle, but I just am unsure, and the weather isn't meant to be brilliant either, which isn't going to help.
But a kind of thrilling 15-12 in its own way, because it'll be so close, it'll be in a knife edge, every moment will have a huge significance.
It'll be a test match.
Yeah.
It's going to be a test match. You look at the amount of Lions, there are 12 Lions players, 11 of them were involved in the test 2 years ago in New Zealand at some stage in the test series, plus Billy Vunipola as well. So, yeah, you've got a really, really high calibre of international player, and I don't know if there's any player starting going to not be a test match animal or an international cap player.
I have a ton of questions to ask about the specifics of the game, which we'll get into, but just in broad terms, this has been talked about as one of the more 50-50 finals that you'll ever come across. Where are you on that spectrum?
Yeah, listen, it is that. Bookies have Saracens by one. I think if you had a gun to my head, I think that's fair. And only to Birch's point, that I think the hurt that Saracens feel from that quarterfinal last year is, if you're looking for a reason for there to be a difference, I think that's going to be potentially one you could choose. They were really wounded by it. They threw a lot at Leinster and then they were put away by them. And I think you look at the calibre of how Saris have been over the last five, six games, other than a loss in Bristol against the run of play. They've had an opportunity to rest all their frontline players last weekend, which they didn't get to do last year before the quarterfinal. So they are, you know, all the talk is that they're ready to produce their best, and they've been in scintillating form in the Premiership.
Yeah, they do look like men on a mission, Keith. You know, 56 points scored in the quarterfinal. They beat Munster by double scores. They've won every game thus far in Europe, and you figure they have their eye very much on number three, really from the off this season.
Yeah, I it's funny. They've a absolutely star-packed team, but they play as a team, and they're in a couple of players that I would look at it. That are not the ones that get the biggest level of credit. I'm a big fan of Rhodes on the back row. I just think he plays at a phenomenal standard. He gets and is one of the most underrated players in the English Premiership. He plays brilliantly all the time. Brian mentioned most of these guys are Lions, or 11 or 12 of them are Lions. They'll all be test animals. Even if they're not, he plays at a test intensity all the time. And I love Good at 15. I like the idea of having a playmaker. Was it the quarterfinal he played at out half when Farrell was injured? And it was as if he said, great, this is an opportunity to go and just enjoy myself. I don't know whether that was what was in his head, but he looked like he was having a barrel of crack, and it was just a load of fun for him. He did whatever he seemed to want to do at any stage, brought every skill that he had and tried it. He can still do that at 15. He may not do it in a final because the pressure is different. But sometimes you may need that to happen, and he has that capacity to do it. But it's everybody seems to have a role and have a job. And when I look at Saracens, and where there is the small bit of envy when you look at them is on between 55 and 60 minutes, and you suddenly see the guys that have been brought onto the field, you know, that are a couple that are over the hill, Berger, but he has 20 minutes of a bit of madness and magic in him. So they roll him out for 20 minutes and he causes carnage and flattens a few guys, has a few turnovers, latches onto something, and suddenly there's a bit of play. And it's whether Leinster, I nearly said Munster, but whether Leinster, to say we in Leinster is very difficult for me, but I do want to say it for this week, because I want Leinster to win. And it's whether Leinster can be in enough of control of the game. And that can be an attitude as opposed to points, yeah, with 15, 20 to go, or whether Saracen's bench will actually knock them over.
Well, let's dive in. There's a few things I want to get your thoughts on. One for you, Bernard, because you're just out of the coaching game in the last few months. You can give us a sense of this. It was very interesting before the Toulouse game in Dublin just gone that there were a number of big Leinster players coming back. Robbie Henshaw, James Lowe hadn't played much. Johnny Sexton, obviously, he played 65 minutes on the day. And much of the talk before that game was, well, are they battle-hardened? Are they going to be able to get to the pitch of this game? Where will they be with 15, 20 minutes to go? And they seem to come through just fine. But then it's very interesting that they're then cosseted away for 3 weeks. And there seems to be this faith now that this Tuesday training sessions and whatever sports science is going on is just fine in lieu of playing. You know, in all your days, it would have been, well, you've got to get a game or two if you want to be at your very best. That ship seems to have sailed now. Is that your understanding of where sports science is? You've no issues with Leinster being battle-hardened here. They're big players.
Yeah, those big players have been there, done that. They don't need to play the week before. And probably no team has as much experience of Leinster of managing those test players as well as they can. So, you know, the week before they played Toulouse, they played a second string team. The team, the majority team, were going to play against Toulouse. You know, they trained Thursday, Friday together, got good intensity. They know the numbers they need to hit.
Right.
So it is very scientific.
And what kind of numbers are they?
Well, it depends on high speed meters, accelerations, decelerations. So it's mainly around GPS data.
Okay.
But they know what the session they need to hit, you know, 10 days out from a game is. They know what a Tuesday needs to look like for them to be right on the money. And that information is available live. You know, so there's sports scientists who are monitoring the session live, so they can cut a session, you know, when they hit the numbers, or they can extend the session for those who don't. So it has become much more scientific. But also the big thing is, these are world-class players who know how to get themselves right mentally. At this stage of the season, you know, they've played enough games, the pre-season under the belt. They just need to get themselves right mentally. And everyone has their own unique way of preparing outside of what the coaches lay on for you. So I wouldn't worry about Leinster at all. Saracens have the same type of quality. You know, they were able to rest players against Exeter.
They rested 11 the week before.
Yeah.
That seems perfect. But I'm like, Johnny Sexton is playing his 10th game of the season for Leinster, which is a mad stat this Saturday.
But surely they're only doing that because they're champions, because they've proven that they can do it in previous seasons. They've proven it already this year without much game time, coming back for the quarterfinal. Albeit they weren't brilliant, but they still got it done, still managed to see their way through. You know,
I guess,
they were in the semi-final 2 years ago and you know, gave Clermont a running start and almost caught them.
Yeah.
So this is a team that has a confident coach in their belief because of what he sees on the training ground, and that's what we're not privy to.
Yeah.
And that's why sometimes you scratch your head when you see someone delivering on, you know, for their province week on week or very consistently, but yet somehow something's amiss at training. clearly in training with Leinster, there's huge confidence derived by the coaching staff of Leo Cullen and Stuart Lancaster to feel as though their sessions are so tough and so physical that they're primed perfectly to play, having not played 80 minutes for 3 weeks.
Okay, so no worries on that front. It was interesting, Lancaster, Stuart Lancaster, for the second or third week now, was almost coming out to defend Leinster a little bit this season, you know, because people have said they're not quite at it in the same way. And he was saying people have sort of looked back at the season and said, oh, we haven't quite fired on all cylinders. But he said, I go back to the point, we put 50-odd points in Wasps, we beat Bath by 40 at the Aviva. The team has scored the most tries in the Champions Cup and the league last year was us. This year we scored the most tries in the pool stages again. We scored 95 tries in the league. So we've got our own threats as an attacking unit as well. It's the two best teams in the final. We're a good attacking team. They're a good attacking team. We're pretty confident ourselves as well. I thought there was just a touch of, everybody hang on here a minute. You're getting in on us a bit quickly. But I still have the sense, a lot of people do, that they haven't been at the same pitch as last year.
Yeah, I thought they ran away with the league. You know, and I thought they stopped when they'd won, and they started concentrating on A, the end of the season, and B, on blooding new players. And I think every single team in that league would wish to have been in the same position to do so. They then followed it up by winning their quarterfinal, and I thought they were poor in the quarterfinal. I thought Ulster did a really good job on them, but Brian just said it, they got the win at the end. So winning playing poorly is enough to really kind of peeve you, to say that, yeah, you have to do an awful lot more, but you're still in the competition. So you're happy, you're in the competition, and you're browned off because you haven't quite hit your marker. But the semi-final, their performance in the semi-final, now there's two things in that. One, I thought they were phenomenal. I thought they played incredibly well, incredibly smart. I thought Toulouse retired and had a couple of injuries, and their selection wasn't as good as it could have been, and I did think they were tired. I still thought Leinster would have beaten them, but the manner in which Leinster played was just, it was fantastic. And I was going to ask Brian just a query on that. The Johnny Sexton played the game, but he didn't play it on the gain line. He was getting himself back into the game, but he looked as if he'd all the time in the world. And for me, he looked back to being kind of slightly happier and in more control of everything that was happening. There was no reaction to people late hitting him or hitting him on the point of being late or not late, which we know is fully acceptable. And but he didn't, because he passed whenever he wanted to. And people kept kind of wondering, is he going to run to the line? Is he not? There was space for him. Yeah. But I'd say he was pretty relaxed after that game, because
I think the pennies probably dropped with him a little bit. That
is it an age thing?
His heroics are going to find, you know, if he continues with those level, that level of heroics, he's not going to be involved in a World Cup later on in the year. And so he's had to cut his cloth a little bit. I think he can do that a small bit more at provincial and European level. It's more difficult to do it because the margins are tighter internationally. And sometimes you have to take it right to the line to throw that pass to put someone through the gap. Whereas you could get away with it maybe, and particularly the dominance of the pack, you know, and the platform that he was getting, he was playing whatever way he wanted to play that game. Be very interesting to see what happens this weekend. I think it'll be very different. There'll be so much pressure on him. They'll be in his face. You look at Jackson Ray. Actually, he was a guy who hasn't been capped, who I think epitomises everything that Saracens do well, and he churns in weekly performances for them, but he will be breathing down his neck, and he'll be looking for those late shots. So I'm interested to see what that temperament is going to be like if it doesn't go his way, because we saw him blow up a little bit against Munster earlier on in the year, and it's still there, it bubbles away, but it's also what drives the standards in him.
But I don't think against Toulouse you can play away from the gain line, because they don't come and look for you. Mm-hmm. Like they have a drift defence, whereas Saracens, like Johnny's going to have to take the ball to the line, because the line's going to come to him. Yeah. He won't. I don't think he'd shy away from it anyway, but I think that's going to be the difference. And Saracens has missed more tackles than anyone else in the Premiership, but it's because they know someone's going to mop it up, and they're willing to miss tackles because they get off the line so much. So how he deals with that's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, it's not the shying away, but no. I don't think Johnny doesn't shy away from anything. I don't want him even thinking that way. I want him giving that pass in the last 5 minutes of a World Cup final. You could be a hero then, putting away someone into the corner, take those broken ribs for that, and you can kind of jump up afterwards. Yeah. But it is the point of, we do so much through him with Ireland in particular, that There will be late hits. There will be hits on it. But I'd rather he just wasn't involved in as many as he is. He gets exposed on them. You can get a late hit, yeah, but you don't want a late hit into your kidneys. You know what I mean? You don't want to be in that position.
Yeah, but there's different margins, yeah, right? When in the Ireland Scotland game, I was sitting beside Johnny Wilkinson in the studio, and he kind of looked at me after he'd taken the third or fourth late shot, and he said, you know, he doesn't have to be that much of a hero. He's already committed the player. He can give it half a second earlier and brace himself for that collision, whereas he was throwing it right in the face of whoever's coming for the hit and not giving himself an opportunity to defend his ribs or defend whoever the contact was going to be. And you're going to be injured and you're going to be knocked down after playing for 14 to 15 years.
Johnny did the exact same for about three or four years and then said, OK, I have too many injuries, it's time to stop. But that's Johnny Wilkinson. So we need Johnny to do the same, I think.
Sort of an interesting interview Rob Kearney gave Bernard in the last week or two. So if you think of the Munster Saracens game, the opening few minutes, Ben Spencer's lobbing balls up and Strettle's going after them. He's not trying to catch them. He's just almost volleying them back and let's see what way the ball bounces. It's like breaking ball in GAA almost. And Kearney was saying, you know, you think of him soaring through the air and catching the ball two-handed. This is now a new challenge where Saracens seem to be happy enough to go up, get a hand back, and let's see what happens.
Yeah, they're probably the first team to really implement that contestable kicking game to such a level that I suppose Ireland then got it and you know added to it. But Saracens are still, I would say, the masters of that. I think you know, Spencer's come in for Wigglesworth. He's probably a bit more attacking nine than Wigglesworth, but his box kicking is pretty good. And it's very difficult if they're. It's so much more difficult for the defending team who are taking those high balls. If the opposition don't want to catch it, they're literally just getting it up in your eye line and looking to slap back a change the whole game. Because obviously,
it would strike me it's very hard to catch it if someone wants to just tip it back.
It's next to impossible. But what Leinster will have worked on is obviously that escort, and they'll also make sure there's a massive focus on winning those scraps. And that's where Saracens tend to do well week by week, is because their work rate's incredible. You know, they massively judge themselves on that. And that means they win those 50-50s on the ground, which gives them possession on the front foot. But Leinster aren't lazy. Leinster work incredibly hard as well. So that's going to be a fascinating. And to be honest, it could be a lucky bounce that wins the game.
Yeah. But I love that. I love when something happens, not in the laws, maybe in the reaction to the laws. So you don't want people colliding in the air. So what's happened in the last, I'd say, 5 or 6 months is that area has been flooded with people running lazy lines in and across. It's very hard to chase that ball and to get up and catch it with your eye on it all the time when you're dodging the guys that are in your way. It's much easier just to say, well, I'm not actually going to go to there, and I'm spiking it back down on my side. So will the reaction come from Leinster this week if that's what Saracens do? Will they say, actually, we're going to put one guy and we're going to start lining them up so that we can catch it once he spikes it back down again? And
it can be a precarious thing to do as well. You know, like, you know, just on Birch's point, I think the urgency that Saracens show of getting their runners into the support lines of right and left of where the ball is being contested. And there was a really good example where Owen Farrell put a ball across for Strettle and he batted it down and Brad Barrett picked up the scraps. And you could see how Lozovsky, the centre, with Barrett, beat into the space Scannell and Farrell and owned that space, where the two lads saw the kick and kind of switched off for a second. And conversely, two Saracens boys got excited knowing there's scraps here to be had. Okay. And in fairness to Mike Haley, he didn't do anything wrong. He checked his run so he could get a spring, so he could accelerate onto it. He tried to catch it above his head, and even still, with Strettle, comfortably got it back. So you don't know where that's going to be beaten back to, though, as well. So you can get lucky on another day where that could bounce and hit the ground, and it could fall into your path. And then they're in a very precarious position as well, where you could catch it on the run or, you know, just as you're about to accelerate. So you have to be careful too what you wish for. Yeah. It can go for you, but it can absolutely go against you.
In the quarterfinal last year, Leinster did score a try off Kearney taking one of them, and Saracens weren't quite set. The other really, I mean, it's amazing because some of the themes which come up again and again. So throughout much of this Six Nations, we watched Ireland amongst the teams shunning points, kicking for the corner as opposed to taking their 3 points. The Wales game jumps to mind. Geez, Saracens take their points. They make the scoreboard your enemy very early on in the game. I know they score big margins ultimately, but often they cut loose late on. So I'm curious, if you were all in the leadership meeting this week, you're going to be talking about, well, when we get our opportunity to kick 3 points, I presume we're kicking the 3 points. We're not going for the corner.
I always think it's tricky. I love the idea of kicking the points. And once you have kickers, like the two kickers that are playing on Saturday, they can kick it over from anywhere. And they're striking the ball beautifully. It kind of depends on the flow of the moment of the game at that stage. And it depends where the kick is. And I know that sounds kind of simple, but if it's in front of the post, they should just bang it over the bar. They shouldn't even think about it. If it's out there and the momentum, and you have that little shift in momentum that happens, and maybe something may have happened to one of the Saracens players, or there might be, like if someone has sin-binned, I'd be kicking it into the corner. You know, you have to gauge it on a minute-by-minute basis.
Yeah, but it's ultimately the decision of the 10. Because if they go up to the captain and they went, goal. No captain's going to go, ooh, I think we might go to the corner on this one. No. It doesn't happen. They go, right, my goal kicker wants to knock three over. I listen to him.
Johnny makes those decisions not because, I think he makes decisions how, they Leinster like to get in front and they like to put a squeeze on teams, but I think if you're looking at defensive mauls, Saracens are up there. So I think that discussion will have happened this week as well beforehand, and then Johnny will still make the call based on how he feels. But
they won't change tack though. They'll still go to the corner.
Yeah, they might. But if,
for the kicks outside the 15, oh yeah, certainly the kicks from 10 to the touchline, yeah, they'll go to the corner.
Well, what Leinster are very good at, actually, and Ireland are very good, if they don't score from the ball, they keep the ball, and eventually they either win another penalty. Sometimes you can force a yellow card. But again, against Saracens, traditionally, they're quite good at keeping their discipline there. Like, other teams crack, generally, when you have sustained levels of pressure on their line.
Yeah.
But normally, it's Saracens doing the ones who are actually forcing that pressure.
I'm sensing you'd prefer them to take the points here.
Yeah,
so
100%. This week, I think the thing about Saracens, if you look at Saracens, even them against Munster, 12-9 at half-time, given how they played, it was a miracle it was that close. The game 2 years ago in the Viva, where Munster were behind but continued to box kick, Munster just rigidly stuck to the game plan, and Saracens were unbelievably comfortable protecting the lead.
Yeah.
I think I'd love to see Saracens behind with 20 minutes to go.
See how they find it.
So I would say take points, but listen, Leinster, they're not going four trophies, yeah, with it, you know, by just taking points. They've been very good at sensing the weakness.
Just a quick, as coach in the box, you have no way to communicate down to them.
No, you can get a message on, but by the time it won't be for that one, it'll be for the subsequent ones.
See, there's not enough time.
And also, Johnny's strong enough to go. No, like you want those guys, and Stuart and Leo would have done that, and check it is, you've empowered them enough that they can make those decisions on the field, and you back them then. But obviously, would you agree?
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Like, you can have the water carrier that has a kicking tee, and you can shout into his microphone, get on the immediately.
Yes, that's what I thought, yeah.
But you know, and you can lob it on. Some referees will go, well, the kicking tee's on, you're going for goal. Most referees want to just go with whatever the initial decision of the captain or the 10 is. Actually, no, we're going to go. Yeah. It's not listening to someone up in a box. They're listening to the players.
Yeah.
So just on the other thing as well, Saracens did what Munster did brilliantly 15 years ago when they were at their pump, was they built their scores with 3-6-9, and then all of a sudden they got a try, and it's 16-0, and you're like, oh my God, we haven't played that badly, and we're 16-0 behind. It's and over. They're brilliant at doing that. Whereas Leinster are a slightly different team, that they're very try focused. They feel as though they'll score tries against anyone, two, maybe three. Can you score more than 20 points against us?
Yeah, it's a fascinating decision to see if they change. And I am asking the man who did kick a drop goal in the 0-9 final here, you know? So you got to take your points sometimes, clearly.
Yeah, there wasn't even, not even penalty advantage. There wasn't even a freebie.
Would you say, Bernard, it was heroic?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, Sexton took one as well. I mean, it wasn't part of our makeup that year, but the boys felt obviously we couldn't break him down. So
the Sexton one was from a long way out, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
From memory, and he made a face afterwards.
Well, we scooped his over the bar for about 10 yards.
Need to get us off the scoreboard, off now.
Yeah.
So. Just Joe, I think Brian mentioned both defences being incredible. I'd love to be in a fly on the wall of the both attack coaches making their case to the head coach about, you know, how much they want attack ball in hand, because it's very hard to convince Leo or Mark McCall that keeping the ball in hand is the best strategy against the Saracens defence or the Leinster defence. So, you know, it's who is more, like, I'm sure Stuart, obviously, he's very forced, you know, he's effectively, he's a co-coach with, with Joe, or with Leo. So, obviously, I'd say he'd be able to convince him. And Leinster have the attack to do it normally, but you know, if you're purely basing your decision on stats and what you see, you'd be saying, oh, it's suicide to run too much against them.
That said, you've got to throw the second pass against Saracens. You know, you've got to throw the second pass.
What do you mean by that?
So they want to, you know, they scream running up at you like Indians that they're going to charge, and then when they get a little bit softer on the outside, and when you throw that second pass, that you can't keep coming charging up because you can miss big, as Birch talked about earlier on. So you've got to be able to have the willingness to, you know, nearly throw the intercept, because that'll be the pass that will cut them. And
in a low scoring game, that's
but you've
scary.
Seen that all, like, that's what Leinster do now under this new coaching ticket, that they back their passing game, and I expect them not to change a whole lot. They'll feel as though, do you know what, we're going to go, we've identified that they are soft out at the 15 metre channel, let's get there and prove it.
Are there echoes of, like, the England-Ireland game here with this one in some respects? Like, I know we love talking about Sexton and Farrell and all the backs, and we never talk about the forwards, and I'm sure you two are happy to do that. Like, the Vunipola brothers, Jamie George, Itoje, Cruz, you're mentioning the other back rowers there as well. Like, they're kind of mammoth. Like, is this one of these days where Akeen Healy, Tyke Furlong, Sean O'Brien, like, that ultimately will decide the game? Is that what we're looking at
they
here?
They decide every game, no mind whatever backs ever think presumably the case. But
true story.
Yeah. I said to Brian earlier before we came on air, not since the England-Ireland game have we been so concerned with the dominant tackles stat. Is that going to be a big feature of this game?
Yeah, we were concerned about that afterwards, and we weren't beforehand. Yeah. But these are teams that are playing all the time. Ireland hadn't been together for 6 or 8 weeks or whatever it was before they played that game. So I think you look at it a little bit differently. But you do need to win the forwards battle. The reason that Leinster have space in the back line is because the forwards give incredible ball and very, very fast ball for the scrum half. It becomes incredibly easy, easier to find the space, to find that maybe the two or three passes to get on the outside. It's when your defensive line that's up against you has to readjust to get back behind the gain line. It makes it easier for you. That's what Munster didn't do. Munster didn't take control at any space in the semi-final. They didn't get themselves into a position of where forwards were running onto a ball and getting over a gain line and the next ruck was quick. Yeah. That didn't happen. Leinster do that all the time. Not with little pop-up runners, though they do with James Ryan, who still doesn't have the shape to be a ball carrier and still out-carries everybody, which is kind of crazy. But there's a far more interplay between the backs and the forwards in Leinster, and that'll get you over the gain line. But the forwards have to do that role incredibly well. Like, you named a load of the English players for Saracens. I mean, Itoje is an unbelievable pain in the neck. He's a total nuisance in the mall, in ruck time. He is all arms and legs. He's in the midst of everything. He's a phenomenal player. You know, he's a player you'd like to have on your side. George has done incredibly well. I think he's cemented his place as the England number two, but he's playing consistently well. But in the semi-final, he was very quiet because that was his need, was to be very quiet. Other people were... a lot of players kind of step up to do their mark. So for me, as a has-been forward, the joy of watching what's going to happen then, because there will be a bit of space, but not as much as there were in the semi-finals. So how do the two forward packs go off against each other? I don't want to see Sean O'Brien going for little one-yard, little bunts up into a kind of barreling group of three or four Saracens. Yeah. I want to see him get an opportunity to latch onto a ball at a bit of pace. Leinster can do it because they've done it consistently during the year. And back to your previous point, or one of the previous points, they've given guys an opportunity to get back from injury. A lot of these guys were injured during the year. They've been given the chance to get back and to play themselves into form. They're fresh. It's very hard to be fresh on the last couple of weekends of a season. Leinster have managed to do it. Whether they're fresh enough or haven't played enough rugby, that's one of the other things. But I think they're in a good spot for it.
Yeah. So, Bernard, the the heft, the power of this Saracens team up front. That must be a worry, though, no?
Yeah, so I think Keith's got it spot on. I think usually when you talk about two massive packs going against each other, you go back to the set piece. So who's going to have the edge of the scrum? Who's going to have the edge of the line-out? I actually think both teams, the scrum will be rock solid for both teams. Both teams will win their own ball. If both teams will win their own line-out ball, it's going to be very little between them all. It's exactly that power around the field. Who can get you over the gain line? Who can clear out the breakdown with real venom and speed? And who can make those impact tackles? And that's where I thought when I watched Saracens Munster after the game, I went, "Wow, there's a winner."
Yeah.
24 hours later, I saw Leinster come back to their best, and I was like, "But I hadn't seen any team who attacked inside that third defender, flat on the gain line, unbelievable clean outs, and again and again and again." And that's where Leinster are going to have to man up.
Yeah, my one bit that really frustrated me with Munster on that semi final. Was kicking, box kicking, to where Billy Vunipola was going to be the first receiver off the catcher. He has taken his time to get back into the game since he's had three bad injuries. Yeah. He's taken his time. He's not in the front line of a huge amount of the defensive play. He sits back in the back line. He's kind of gauging it. But if you give it to him and give him a 15-yard run,
yeah,
I mean, he'd go through the bloody bar over there. You know, he's a bear of a man. So you just want to try and keep him moved around the field a little bit more. So I just felt that was part of Munster's game plan that they stuck at this year. I thought they made a huge improvement from 2 years ago, but they were still outplayed.
I think the footwork of the Leinster forwards is more impressive than the Munster pack. Talk about James Ryan. He never, hardly ever carries the ball directly into contact. Always some movement, right or left. Sean O'Brien, likewise, was a time that he used to just, if there was no hole, he'd make a hole. Whereas now he's looking to run to soft shoulders, and partly because they're looking for an offload game as well, which wasn't evident four, five, 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Whereas now they're thinking, get in behind, keep this ball alive, change the point of contact. And I think that's why Leinster have been able to create so much fast ruck ball, is because they're not running into, and to use a children's term when you're teaching them, run to the trees rather than run to the trunk. They're running to arms, and straight away, they're soak tackles rather than dominant tackles. Players are getting in behind. You're getting offloads away, or you're giving a target to be able to clear over those rucks, and bang, Luke McGrath's gotten rid of it. So I think that's what differentiates that Leinster pack from lots of other packs, and that's why they'll have success with generating that fast ruck ball.
The referee is Jerome Garces, which was met with general dismay. Can you explain why he's so terrible?
Yeah, the ruck will be a shit show.
Is that the technical description?
Yeah
okay.
it'll be, he'll let anything go on.
Right.
And listen, maybe off the back of how it's been met, maybe he'll, referees read newspaper articles and I'm sure look online and think, maybe I need to tighten that up also. Maybe Joel Juge, who's head of European referees, will have had a word saying, listen, I've given you a big game here. I need it to be clean. I need it to be a spectacle. So don't allow the usual antics to go on in this game. So, but the two teams will be analysing each other, but they'll analyse the referee as well and see what he's hot on and know that they can get away with a little bit more at ruck time. Hold on to the ball a little bit longer in contact. It has to be the most obvious jackling position of all time if he's going to give it to you. So hold on, fight in the ground, wait for your support to come and you should be able to hold on to possession.
And is Garces wrong in the way he officiates it, or is it just a fair enough interpretation? Or
it's just his interpretation, right?
I think he's unbelievably consistent
in his awfulness.
So whatever Brian calls the way he referees the ruck, that's like that every week. I think the most interesting, so I don't think there's any point in analysing Garces and what he does in top 14 or what he's done in Europe this year and expect to see anything different. And Leo and Mark McCall know him well enough, and all the players know him well enough. The most interesting thing is, can you find out what his review was like post-Munster? Because either Joel Juge, because Joel Juge appointed him for this match, right? So it was either going to be a Welsh referee, which was Nigel, or it was going to be probably Poit or Garces. So the fact that he's got the game, either Joel Juge thought he had a very strong game in the semi-final, or he's given him four or five things that he needs to go out and do differently. So if you're preparing for that game, now I know Munster would have definitely had issues around the breakdown, they would have issues around the offside line, and you know that would have been fed back to Joel Juge. Whether he accepted that was real or not, it's going to be interesting. So I watched him referee last weekend in the top 14. He didn't referee differently. But will he referee differently in a European Cup final because he's been told these are the areas? So that information will be absolutely crucial to both teams. And you know after 5 minutes as well, so you've got to maybe adapt on the run.
But there's a bit of...
Just a really, really quick question from a coach's perspective. Can Leo Cullen and Mark McCall ask Joel Juge how he's going to referee? Can he specify, is there anything in particular that you've told him to identify and to be clear on?
Yes, you can. You can. You can absolutely say, you can send clips of the opposition. So Leo would have sent clips of Saracens, probably against Munster because that's the most relevant game, Wickar says. And you ask him for his view on that. And then you would also say, will you speak to Jerome about that and what will you say? So, and then obviously in the dressing room then you'll say, has Joel spoken to you? And do you agree about that? Now, Mark McCall's doing the same thing. And fairness to Garces, Garces is unbelievably calm. And he might be saying, yeah, but he's not going to do it. But you will know after 5 minutes. But,
the only two parts for me that make it tough, I think, and actually make it a little bit tougher for Leinster, is that he allows a little bit of creeping on the line. And when you have a really fast blitz, as you call crazy defence for the first 4 or 5 metres, and they all work in unison. So, like, the first guy is offside, but they don't call it because the guy beside him is in the exact same position as him. They creep on that line, and they creep when the scrum half is passing the ball, is on to going down to pick it up and doing it as to, is it up and are you passing? And he does that, which very few of the other referees do to the same degree. So that puts a bit of pressure on it in that element. And that's the one part. That's where Munster got really caught in it. But they got caught in it because their ball was slow. Yeah. They were having to go back to get the ball. They'd go back to get it. Connor was having to dig for it. And as he was picking it up, they were all in his face again. They're in everybody's face. So they were under pressure all the time. Some of it of their own making, some of it of the referee's interpretation.
You found a way to talk about Munster at every answer. I think it's wonderful.
But do you know what? I'm hoping there are some Munster people here. Is this a Leinster show? I'm in the wrong show if it's a Leinster
show. It's a Leinster show. It is a Leinster show. Well, actually then, seeing as you've brought it up, Do you know what's happened with Felix Jones and Gerry Flannery, the nature of this departure?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I know it came as a shock to everybody that they both went in around the same time. I think pretty much as everybody else knows, they were offered contracts and didn't take them. Now, whether they took them for the same or didn't take them for the same reason or for different reasons, I don't know.
Right. Because, I mean, with Felix Jones, we're guessing here in speculation, you can see Rob Howley potentially coming in and his nose might be out of joint. But the Gerry Flannery one is surprising, especially.
But we were talking about this last week or 2 weeks ago, that Munster are under-resourced in the coaching side. So there had to be another coach coming in. And you know,
they're extra under-resourced now.
Yeah. Well, they are. But to take that route that goes on afterwards, if you were a player, what do you do when you look at it? And you say, okay, they're guys, they're my friends, they're good coaches, they've been there for a good while, and you know there is that sense of unity in Munster. Those guys are going. Right, that's really sad, they're gone. Who's coming next? Is there a level of excitement that's going to come in there? Is there an opportunity because Munster are already going to go for one coach? Does this change their ambition to what type of coaches they get? Because now they have to get three coaches. And that becomes exciting then in that instance. Tough for the guys that are going, but if they've decided not to take a contract, you know.
Most likely going to be international coaches.
Because of the World Cup cycle.
But also not many coaches don't have, coaches of a global scale that Munster will be looking for.
Yeah.
You know, to specifically look for, will want to up sticks and move there at, you know, short notice. We're coming to the end of the season.
Yeah.
They're already looking for next year, you know. Yeah. So it's certainly not working in their favour. So they'll have to be looking into that international window, which means that they're going to be without the coaches that they probably want for the first 3-4 months of the season too, which isn't ideal.
Well, they're starting from scratch, you know. I presume, Bernard, it's not easy to get two high calibre coaches at this kind
of... Three. Well, they need three.
Is Rob Howley not inching his way towards one of those roles?
Well, that's on speculation, I think.
Speculation.
Yeah, I think Stephen Larkham's been mentioned. Stephen Larkham over Rob Howley, obviously the advantage Larkham would have if he is in the picture is that he could start straight away. I think obviously if you had Felix there, you could potentially wait for a World Cup coach, but now it's going to maybe change the whole dynamics of the decision-making, which isn't great. I mean, it's very unusual for it to have... like. Realistically, they could have lost the weekend to Benetton. Like they could have been out, and then you would have been making this decision in the off season.
Yeah.
You know,
it seems crazy that we're having a decision a week before.
Yeah,
how does that happen?
When they review it, they're going to say, "Listen, we should have had a deadline. We should have known this." But the 31st of January, it's very sloppy to allow those negotiations to go on so long. And I think that's
It often happens with players. Yes. It rarely happens with coaches. That
even players, it's late for players, but it does. It very rarely happens with coaches, right? Yeah.
Now, Keith, you've ruined our Champions Cup preview.
My work here is done. I'm off. Mike Heineken, please, lads.
We're coming to a close here on the radio section. Later on, we're giving away a brilliant prize. One of our 100 green ticket holders will be off to see Scotland, Ireland in Japan come September. Before we go, then, final predictions for Saturday, Keith.
Saracens. Sorry, I was just trying to say that. To see a little Pinteresque pause. Look, sure, you're only guessing.
Sure.
Because it is that close to do it. I want Leinster to win. I nearly said I want Munster to win. I do, actually. But I do. I want Leinster to win. I think it would be an incredible fillip for Ireland and all those players and the other players to go into a pre-World Cup with a high level of confidence, knowing that they've beaten some of these great players as well, because it gets someone back up over since the England loss at the start of it. But I think it's going to be unbelievably close. Mm-hmm. And I'm disappointed to see that it's due to have a bit of rain in Newcastle, which is cold on the warmest day of the year anyway. And I think it's going to be that tight. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going over. I'm commentating the game for Off the Ball, and I'm actually... I'm just really, you know, when it isn't your team, really, you can kind of get rid of the nerves and just enjoy it for the spectacle that it is. So I'm actually looking forward to it for the crack. So I haven't given you an answer.
No, it's fine, because I think that's the fair enough answer. If you can't get to a TV or you want brilliant commentary either way, it is live and Off the Ball. Conor Morris and Andy Dunn alongside Keith on Saturday. So, Bernard, maybe it is foolhardy asking for a prediction. We've all established this thing is on a knife edge. So give us your final thoughts, or if there's anything we haven't hit on that you wanted to.
I think... I'm a massive admirer of Saracens. I think they're quality. But Brian spoke about Leinster throwing that second pass, and so many teams don't back themselves to throw it because they don't have the skill set, and that plays into Saracens' hands. You know, I think Leinster will back themselves, and I think that they have the creativity, the talent to unlock the Saracens' defence. Plus, they're incredibly fit, incredibly mentally tough. And they've won it before, you know, and won lots of other things. So I think that's how Saracens beat teams. Generally, the opposition crack first. I don't see Leinster cracking. So I think Leinster will just about be good enough, but it'll be epic, yeah.
Great answer. Final word?
I have absolutely no idea. Keith covered it in everything that he said there. It's the closest, most evenly matched final that I can remember. And two, without a shadow of a doubt, the two best teams in the competition. You know, that hurt that Saracens will be feeling from the quarterfinal last year, the way they've been able to rest their key players, will that add the edge? It's impossible to call.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Of course, I'm hoping for, you know, it's the drive for five, but, you know, maybe Saracens by one on the basis of being beaten last year, but I hope I'm wrong.
Okay. We've been here with thanks to our friends at HeinekenRugbyClub.com. But first, everybody at Tramline Dublin, a round of applause, please. Keith Wood, Bernard Jackman, Brian O'Driscoll.